Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's Wednesday, and I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 1st, 2012, episode 457. And today's episode is brought to you by Back on Track Products. Good morning, horse people.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all. The day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and
wow. Wow. We have so much to talk about on today's show. I am so excited about today's show. It's going to be fantastic, but there's nothing I am more excited about than hearing Glenn basically have to apologize to the entire country of Germany for slamming their riding, slamming their food, slamming their country, everything on Monday because, well, what happened, Glenn?
The la 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 la. Can't hear you. You're breaking up, Jamie. Sorry, you have to call back.
I'm not buying it. Go ahead. Come on.
All right. I apologize. I, Glenn the Geek of the Horse Radio Network, apologize for everything I said bad to the entire country of Germany. And our listener, Yudi, who apparently is German, was really mad at me. Because they did pretty well over the eventing over the weekend. And, you know. Apologize.
Yeah.
And this goes to prove that you should never listen to what a horse husband says about anything relating to horses. Just saying.
I mean, really, he's like, I just really didn't like the way that the Germans rode dressage. Well, suck it. They pretty much are awesome. The German style. Let's see. That would be first in the individual, third in the individual, and then 15th was the next. No, I'm sorry. It goes a little further down than that. So first and third is pretty darn good to start with, okay?
Not to mention the team. They kind of won the team thing, you know.
The team gold. Gold,
yeah,
Glenn.
That's
not,
yeah,
second place. That's not third place. That's first place. So, Yudi, I apologize for his comments. Please just don't listen to him pretty much any time. So now today we get to rip on France because you'll find out why. Coming up a little bit later in the show. But seriously, congratulations to every eventer out there who just worked so incredibly hard this weekend. On today's show, we're going to talk to one of the eventers that actually didn't even make it to show jumping. We're going to talk to Holly Bennett from her hospital bed in England. We're going to talk to her and her husband, get an update on how she's doing. And then, you know, we've got some other stuff coming up too, Glenn.
Yes, we do. We have Victoria Spicer, of course, the lovely Victoria from Horse and Country TV. They've been doing daily shows over there. And I got to talk to her about that. That's kind of funny, too, Jamie. Their setting where they're recording their daily shows is very interesting. We're going to chat with her about that. And, of course, the Olympics, their whole life is revolved around the Olympics right now at Horse and Country TV. And then later on in the show, we have a legend coming on. And this was something that Michelle set up from thehorse.com. We're going to be talking about donkeys and mules. And when she said last week, oh, we're going to talk about donkeys and mules next week, I thought, well, that'd be fun. I love donkeys and mules. And I didn't realize who she got as a guest. And I don't know that she realized who she got as a guest. I'm not sure. We'll find out. But she is Dr. Robert Miller, who happens to be like the living legend in the whole, you know, natural horsemanship world.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's the one who kind of created imprint training for foals. He definitely, actually, when you buy your fly predators, they send you a book for free written by Dr. Robert Miller. Did
is that
you
right?
know that?
No.
Yeah, I got a book with my fly predators. So we'll talk to them coming up as well. It's going to be an awesome show. But again, I just wanted to start it out with Glenn's apology. Now, on to our daily winnings, Glenn.
Why don't you go?
Well, my daily winnie goes out to Boyd Martin, and he, just sad that he didn't get to show jump, but he is a hero because, you know, it's all about the horse. And that is what all of us horse people like. So Boyd Martin updated everybody. And that's the other thing is he has a blog. So he constantly keeps everybody up to date. So I'm just going to read a little from his blog talking about Otis. He said, unfortunately, Otis had a swollen leg this morning and was very lame with the jog. He was sent to the hold box and Boyd withdrew him there. At first, we thought he might have twisted his ankle on the steep hills, but it looks like he has some kind of infection in his leg. It's good news to us because it does not look like a serious injury, and Otis is going to be okay after a rest. As you can imagine, we are beyond disappointed that Otis and Boyd could not finish their first Olympics. Right now, it feels very incomplete. After all the many years of working towards our ultimate goal, they did not finish. It's tough. We're going to hear a little bit more about that coming up from Holly, too. I can't even imagine. It goes on to say, Boyd especially feels, and this is sad, sad. Boyd especially feels like he has led his team and all the great people who have supported us along the way down. I know that is not the case because Boyd rode incredibly well in the dressage and the cross country, and Otis was better than we could have ever hoped for. He is a superstar to us. And we owe him forever. Now, the most important thing is that we get Otis home safely so we can start with his recovery and his well-deserved rest in the field. So tomorrow is another day. I love those guys. I'm sorry. Just fantastic.
Well, terrific. He did the right thing, obviously. And we're did you find out? I wanted to no, we didn't figure out why Ingrid Klimke didn't ride in. Why didn't she ride? Do you know? In the jumping?
Come back to me. Do your daily winning.
Okay, I'll do my daily winning. I'm going to change it up here a little bit, and we're going to give my daily winning to somebody. I'm giving my daily winning to somebody who posted on our Facebook page, who was our guest on the driving show last week, Shauna Kroll. Posted pictures, if you remember right, she's our red racer, trains racehorses, and one of her horses that has done very well, his name is Wildfire. And apparently Wildfire is on a bit of a vacation, but she posted some terrific pictures on our Facebook page of Kayla, little Kayla and Wildfire hanging out together. So they were just some cute pictures, and I thought I would thank Shauna for posting those. We love to see pictures of horses, of course. So thank you so much for that. We really appreciate it. So now, did you find out why? Did you figure anything out?
I did not. Could not find it. You gave me about 5 seconds to do research because you just went off topic here. You could have just typed the question to me and I would have looked it up. But no, you had to just blurt it out on the air.
Well,
what
you threw me under the bus at the beginning of the show, so what the heck is revenge?
You deserve it. You deserve it.
Let's go over the leaderboard here. Of course, in the team, Germany, the most terrific country, apparently, in eventing. And, of course, Michael Young actually won after winning the gold medal in the individual, has to be ranked as one of the top riders, if not the top rider in the world. He won the WEG. He won the European Championships last year and then comes back and wins this. I'm going to be interested to see what the rankings are after this Olympics because he's got to be up there.
Well, did you, I sat glued to my computer. So much so, I didn't even want to talk to anybody. And I texted you yesterday. I'm like, don't you dare send me anything because eventing was starting at like 3:30 in the morning my time. And I'm sorry, that is just too early for me. So I actually sat down on my computer yesterday. I said, text me when it's over, because then I can start and do the whole thing and watch it piece by piece by piece in a row. So I didn't read anything. I didn't talk to anybody. I did not do anything yesterday. So I sit down and I'm waiting for Boyd Martin. I'm like, where's Boyd? I never found out until after it was over. But this is what I just have to vent about NBC and their stupid online coverage. First of all, no announcers for the show jumping at all. You could kind of hear the actual announcers that were inside the park, but there was nobody commentating, no announcing. It was just a very quiet show jumping around.
Which sounded like Nigel, by the way. Didn't it sound like Nigel doing the announcing?
It was, Nigel and the other guy who's always there from Rolex. So it was the same guys, same Rolex guys, but they were in there. I heard Nigel on cross country. But those were the only announcers you could hear, were the ones that were coming out of the speaker. So it was like watching show jumping like you were watching dressage with just, the random clapping. So there's that, and I go to log on. I wanted to talk to nobody. I have not picked up my phone. I have not logged on to my computer. I finally get the time. I get done writing. I come in, and I sit down, and I log on to NBCOlympics.com. I pull it up, and I hit equestrian. And, who is going to be going to these things besides people that haven't watched it yet? Right? I mean, pretty much it's people that haven't seen it because they're in a different time zone and they want to log on. What does it say, first of all? You click on the equestrian part. Germany wins gold! That is what splashed across the page! I'm like, are you kidding me? I just ruined the whole thing for me already. I mean, my God. Michael Young wins, followed by this. And then Great Britain and America falls seventh, and this whole thing is written right under the click here to watch. Are you kidding me? So I knew going into it kind of what was going to happen, but I didn't pay attention to the details. So I spent hours yesterday going back and forth and rewatching. But sadly, it wasn't going to work. when you already know what happened. NBC, that's ridiculous. I want to give NBC this. And I am going to write a strongly worded letter to NBC. Thank you very much. I have tested.
In their defense, though, this is the first time that we've ever been able to watch every rider, every round of every equestrian event in the history of the Olympics in some form,
Okay, so, great. So put it on the freaking TV. I'm sorry. You watched
it.
Watched,
hey, by the way, it was on TV yesterday. We watched it. We recorded it and watched it. It was on one of the NBC stations yesterday because we recorded and watched it last night.
Okay.
Yeah.
You watch cross country. You go to watch some badminton when there's 50 people in the stands and it's pretty much family members. And then you go and you watch cross country online. And there's 60,000 people walking the cross-country course. 50,000 to 60,000 people was the estimated total for the people that were on cross-country. And you don't put that on TV, and you've got water polo on TV for 6 hours? Are you kidding? I am so fed up. I am going to write a strongly worded letter.
By the way, cross-country was on TV, too. You just got to check every one of their 12 stations.
I only get two. I only get two NBC stations with DirecTV, so none of this is on TV. But dear God, I watched little 12-year-olds flip in circles last night for 4 hours on the main time. But I'm sorry, there's just something weird about that.
Okay. Tell us how you feel this morning, Jamie.
I'm done. Let's go right now, because we were lucky enough to be able to talk to Holly Bennett. Holly Bennett fell at the third jump on cross country, and we didn't get to see what happened in the whole, how did they not film fence three? There were so many falls at fence three, and we got to see later on what's his name fall at fence three. We didn't get to see it. So we got to talk to Holly. She was rushed into the hospital. They had a huge hold on course. Her mare, Gin and Juice, kept running, finished the whole course without her.
Finished it, yeah. I think he jumped all the jumps, too, on the way.
I think she did, yeah. So we're gonna play back. We talked to her this morning at around, well, it was about 5:30 my time, so excuse me for being a little more sleepy.
Well, hi, Holly, and thank you so much for joining us from the hospital bed there in England. We appreciate you being on this morning to give us an update. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, and I just want to send a huge thank you out to everyone that sent messages through Facebook, Twitter, Hotmail, everything. It's amazing how many people out there are supporting Jinjuice and I, and I'm very, very grateful to have everyone out there.
Well, now, Holly, when we saw the feed here in the United States, they didn't show your fall. Can you tell everybody what happened? We didn't get to see it.
Yeah, actually, they can't find any film of it.
Okay.
Which is a little disappointing because I honestly don't know what happened. I had a super jump over 1 and 2, and the mare is actually jumping the best she's ever jumped, and I was expecting like a good... good, great go, and I saw a good line to number 3 and a good jump in. And last thing I remember in mid-airs, I don't know if she saw the, like, because on the back side of the first of part A, there was a couple of trees and shrubs on the ground, and I don't know if she saw those the last second and put a leg down. There's a bunch of different things going around saying what happened, but honestly, I'm not 100% sure what happened.
Well, Holly, I would like to point out that Jenna Juice was not ready to stop. I've never seen... She was ready to finish the whole course.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm so frustrated because, like I said, that she's never gone this well. I mean, she was so good on dressage day, and I've never galloped her as much as I have preparing for this event. Like, she's fit. She's ready to go, and, you know, you work 7 years to get here, and it's just a bummer. But, I mean, in hindsight, it's fine because she's going to be okay, but it's disappointing because... You know, the woulda, coulda, shoulda, if I ended on my score, like, that's a medal, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Now, as far as your health, what's the scoop?
Hopefully I'm going to be getting out of the hospital here today, and then I'm not allowed to fly home for a few days, so I have to hang out until I'm basically a bit more comfortable because I can't sit in an airplane for 8 hours right now.
So what happened? What was the result of the fall?
I fractured my pelvis.
Oh.
And, yeah. And then, I have bruises and that. It's just, you know, you're just muscle sore. And our team doctor has been unbelievable. And the staff at this hospital is unreal. Like, the best hospital I've ever been to. And unfortunately, I've been to a few. So, the staff here has been amazing and supportive and, very, very accommodating, and I have my own room, and, you know, if it's going to happen anywhere, it's probably the best spot to have an accident.
Now, I'm just going to go ahead and put this out to the point two guys. Point two underwear. That's what we need next. Protect the pelvis.
You know what, though? Without that point two vest, I think I would have been in some serious trouble, so I'm a huge, huge supporter of them. I'm not only sponsored by them, but like even if I wasn't, I'd be wearing one. I make all my kids and students wear them. Like literally, I think that might have saved my life there. So I'm very lucky to have had that on.
Now you it said you had a concussion. Did you hit your head as well?
Yeah, I'm sure I did. I think I had a slight concussion. So, I mean, all that protective gear that we wear is seriously important. And, you know, I just don't understand why people actually don't jump with helmets on. And I never go cross country without my air vest on. And some people make fun of me for it. But, you know, you can't predict an accident. And I'd rather be safe than sorry.
Same way, I don't do the cross country without it either. But, again, I mean, it's just one of those things. It revolutionized the Olympics, in my opinion, with all the falls, and to have pretty much everybody is fine. You know, I mean, you're probably the worst of it, and you've got a fractured pelvis, but you're going to be fine. Imagine what it would have been like without everybody wearing a point two. Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing.
Right. Hang on one sec, Jamal just wants to say something here.
All right. This is her husband, Jamal, who's one of the best horse husbands in the world, as he was on our Horse Husbands episode. Hi, Jamal.
Oh, you are just too kind. Hey, how's it going? Hey, I just wanted to say something about the Pointier vest. When I originally got up to the scene, I obviously didn't see what happened, and I didn't see if her vest deployed, but when we got to the trauma room, it was apparent that it had spared her cervical and cervical vertebrae and also her coccyx, as a matter of fact. At first, they thought that's what it was, but it turns out if that had been injured, it would have been essentially what they said, career-ending, but it appeared that did, in fact, spare her from that injury, so... the staff here was amazing. We're all on standby. There were over a dozen trauma team members on standby, and they kept me informed essentially within a half hour of her getting here and kept giving me updates and have given me unrestricted access to her. So, like I said, in that respect, being a family member, it's been great that I haven't been kept in the dark and have been able to keep her immediate and extended family informed.
Well, that's... And, you know, Jamal, this, you know, as a horse husband, this is the one thing that we dread on cross-country day is these falls. And I'm sure you have to be the same way even after all this time.
Oh, yes. Holly is obviously very competent. She, you know, is a brilliant tactician. She does a course walk, does planning at night. She reviews her photographs of each jump, approaches the line. So I give her space to do that, but... you know, this part is the fog of eventing. You don't know if these things are going to happen or not. You just hope that you make a good run and, you know, everyone's fine. So.
Yeah. Well, she sounds like now, how much rest is going to be involved here at this point?
They said it's going to be pretty much like a comfort thing, but they expect, like, I probably won't be riding for 4 weeks. Hopefully, ideally, I'd like to be back in 3 because I have Buck Davidson coming out to a clinic the beginning of September. And then I have my first show at Copper Meadows back where I want to ride some horses. So my theory is if I take it easy the first couple weeks, let myself heal, I can still be teaching. Unfortunately, now I'm not going to be able to ride again for a couple more weeks. So I got some great girls back at the barn that, you know, can help ride my horses and I got to start teaching to pay off this trip.
All right, Holly, we're going to do this together. I'm summoning up the courage to move up to training for the first time at Copper Meadows. So I will be
awesome.
There. I will be a nervous wreck, and I would like to see you there on your horse, too.
Perfect, perfect. We can go on a team because I have a training level horse.
Oh, my God, you don't want me on your team?
I don't know if you want me on your team at the rate I'm going.
Oh, we're going to be quite the pair. Let's team up. Let's do it.
Perfect. That sounds awesome.
Well, Holly, if you're anything like your teammate Jessica, who recovers in about 2 minutes from pregnancy and accidents, you should be out there in 5-6 days.
I hope so. I hope so.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck. Get well. Follow the doctor's advice, though, so we don't overdo it too soon.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Holly.
Thanks, Holly. Thanks, Jamal. You guys, you know, best of luck to you. And there is a little side note here, Glenn, before we let them go. You got to mention the hotel because we've all got to flood these people.
Yeah, they booked a reservation to go celebrate the Olympics at a hotel in Paris. First mistake, Holly. Jamal called the hotel. Maybe Jamal could come on and tell us the name and everything. And Jamal called the hotel and said, well, you know, my wife, the Olympian, was injured in an accident. It's in the hospital and we can't make it. And the hotel is refusing to give their deposit back, of all things. So
it's a lot of money.
Jamal, what's the name of the hotel? We'll call him out here.
It is called the Pullman Tour Eiffel or something like that.
Something French.
Actually, yes. It's the Pullman Paris Tour Eiffel. Actually, I prepaid for the room, so it's not the deposit. It's the full amount.
Okay.
Their contention is obviously that, you knew in advance the disclosure said that it is non-refundable. But, you know, with every rule, there's always an exception, especially in this case. It's not like it's unverifiable. She has a head cold.
Yeah.
I forwarded them a medical certificate from the doctor. The doctor, as a matter of fact, like I said, has been great. He scan that as well as the COC statement in regards to her incident, and yet they still, you know, won't budge. I spent about 3 hours on the phone between Expedia and also the hotel, and the manager refused to talk to me. So it is what it is. You know, I gave up after a while because I just wanted to focus on taking care of Holly. So
I'm not giving up, though, Jamie. After the show today, I am calling the hotel on the radio, on the air, recording, and we're going to find out, we're going to let them put it out there for all of our tens of thousands of listeners to hear exactly why they're not doing that. And we'll put that on the air Friday morning when we come back live. So you got my dander up, and I'm going to have a little fun with that one.
Well, I appreciate it, and I think that would be worth the $400. So.
Well, all right, you guys, be safe. Take it easy. Take care of Holly for us, and we'll see you guys at Copper Meadows.
Great, thank you.
All right, bye, Holly.
Thanks, Holly.
Well, that was an interview with Holly Bennett, who was injured on the cross-country course 2 days ago there at the Olympics, and I will make that call hopefully here after the show today and have that recording for everybody on Friday morning with the hotel in France. We'll see how I make out. Jamie,
Hold on. Let's send this out. Do we have any French listeners? No, sorry.
Yeah,
do we have any listeners that speak French? Because what's going to happen is Glenn's going to call them, and they're going to say, oh, no, English. I don't know how to say.
Parlez-vous français? They're going to say, parlez-vous français? Do you speak French?
Habla.
Yeah.
Solamente habla español. No, they're going to say, we don't speak English. You only speak French. So we need to have, like, a listener behind you that's just going to come in and be like, oh, well, I speak French, and talk to them about it. So anybody that speaks French, please go ahead and Facebook us right now.
You know what I forgot about? Is we have some horse ballers in Canada. Remember we did that show on horse ball with the French Canadians up there? They all speak French. I have to get one of them to come on with me.
Perfect.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do that. That would be fun. You're right. Absolutely right about that. It was so nice of her to join us. We really appreciate that. I wanted to mention that, and she was too proud to mention this, but I'm going to mention it on her behalf. At hollybennett.com, that's Bennett is with two N's and two T's, hollybennett.com. She has a little fundraising.
H-A-W-L-E-Y,
that's correct. And they have a little fundraising thing on their website. She has been obviously in training now for 5 months and, you know, losing the income from doing lessons and students and all of that. And then she also has this injury that's going to put her out now for a while and some additional expense, and Jamal just asked if we could mention the website and the button that's on there. If you'd like to donate anything to her, I know we have a lot of Canadian listeners and a lot of American listeners who love the Canadians with us. If you'd like to donate, there is a button on there, and we'd appreciate any help that you could give. So that's at hollybennett.com. You can just we'll post a link to it on our Facebook page too. Jennifer will take care of that.
And speaking of Jennifer, she has found the update on Ingrid Klimke of Germany. Because when you said she didn't ride, I was like, wait a second. I did see her ride. But she rode in the first part in the team area, I'm sorry, in the individual. But she had 9 faults in her first round. And then Jennifer says there was speculation that she withdrew after that to spare her horse another round or to try to give her teammate Dirk Schreid a spot. Only Michael and Sandra jumped for Germany in the last round, but then the update came out that apparently Ingrid was trying to substitute Dirk, but the rules did not allow it. So she did not have a very successful beginning. Her horse looked really tired when she went out and did show jumping, as did a whole lot of them. And I can't believe that they had to do 2 show jumping rounds after that. Oh, that is just torture for these poor ponies. But some of them did really, really well with it, and some of them did not. And I think she had more of a tired horse. And so withdrew, hoping to substitute a teammate. Didn't happen, and they didn't have either one. But it worked out in the end because, dear God, they won gold.
Well, we're going to be back here in a minute. We're going to talk to Jamie. Hopefully Victoria will be joining us. But, Jamie, you had something exciting happen in the last couple of days, too, that we posted on our Facebook page yesterday that we have not mentioned yet that I'm very proud of you for. So we'll talk about that. in a minute, right after this word from Back on Track Products. Listeners have been asking why Back on Track products work and what is the science behind them. Well, they have evolved from a combination of ancient Chinese wisdom and modern science, as well as skilled textile production. This result is a polyester polypropylene fabric with a ceramic powder that's melted into the fabric's very own weave. The ceramic particles reflect body heat as an infrared wave, a form of energy with a highly documented pain-relieving effect. This reflective heat helps to ease inflammation, reduce muscle pain, and increase blood circulation. Back on Track products can be used to warm up your horse's muscles before exercise, thus reducing the risk of strains or injury. Most importantly, the product's dual capacity to prevent injury as well as ease and expedite the recovery of already present injuries is what makes Back on Track products so unique. I hope that helps as to why their products are so effective. Visit them at backontrackproducts.com. That's backontrackproducts.com. And I happen to know there were a lot of Olympians over there that are using Back on Track products, especially the sheet. They've taken them with them over to London. So we're going to be, I'll tell you next week a few of those that'll be competing who are using their products. So I know that they're very popular with some of the top level Olympians at backontrackproducts.com. All right, Jamie.
All right, what?
Well, I just wanted to mention before we get to Victoria, I think she's here, but I did want to congratulate you and mention that your story got published. You and Jet.
It's so cool. It's so cool, you know, to be able to write something that's so incredibly personal and to have people enjoy the story. You know, I sent it, I just emailed the story because I really liked how it came out, because I sent some pictures to Elizabeth and I sent the story, and it's one of those.
Let's explain where it is. Elizabeth Letts, the writer of the $80 champion, started highlighting off the track thoroughbreds that have been put to other good use in a second career. Go ahead.
No, not even off the track thoroughbreds. It's just a horse that.
Right.
A kind of a rescue horse, kind of like the $80 champion, where, you know, Harry DeLayer took him off the meat truck and ended up at the gardens running Grand Prix. So ours doesn't quite have the ending that one did, but it's a great story, and I just appreciate her publishing it, and hopefully it'll make a book someday. But Chad, actually, when I read it to him, he's like, I didn't know you wrote like that. Like, he's like, how long did that take you? I said, I just sat down and wrote it, actually, and I just tried to visualize every single part of it. And, I mean, I could have gone on and on and on. And most people's little stories are probably two paragraphs. Mine's like, you know, 15 pages. So sorry about the length. I tried to cut it short, and that's just the way it came out. But thanks, Elizabeth, for highlighting rescues. So you can actually go on and submit your own story to Elizabeth Letts, and it's elizabethletts.com. Send her your story. Maybe you'll make a book someday. I don't know. It was just fun to send it out.
It was terrific. It was absolutely terrific. I know a lot of our listeners commented on it. If you want to find a link to it, just go to Horses in the Morning Facebook page, and we have a link there. All right,
did you actually read it?
Ready.
Did you read
that?
It?
Sorry, yes, I did.
I said, did you read that?
Oh, yeah.
I figured your ADD would kick in. It was so long.
I
got
to tell you, I'm kind of impressed, because I thought she wrote it, and I didn't realize. I thought you sent her like an outline, and she wrote it. I'm very impressed if you wrote it.
Well, of course I wrote it. Yes, I wrote it. Thank you. You didn't even believe. See, you and Chad both. I didn't know you could write like that. I just wrote what was in my heart.
Now I know.
All right,
well, write our releases from now on. We're going to get Jamie to do them. Except they'd be 3 pages long and nobody'd read them, so we'll skip that.
I'm too expensive. Yeah, I got paid a lot. A big zero. All right, well, Victoria is on with us, and talk about, we've been flooded with Olympic talk.
Wait a minute. Hold it.
Oh, wait.
It's this week. Okay.
Victoria's music. Sorry, forgot about that. Victoria Spicer from Horse and Country TV. You have been mired in the Olympics for weeks now. Tell us what is going on.
Well, I feel like I've been in the little Olympic bubble for 4 days. I live just across the river from the Greenwich Equestrian venue, and we've been filming a daily chat show every day of the games. And so every morning I set off with my running shoes on and I walk past the venue, climb up that hill that caught so many horses out on cross country day, and I head up to my studio and I watch on telly all day long. And then we do an Olympic chat show at night. So I am somehow immersed in the games, but not quite in the venue.
How cool is it that you get to walk to it? That's ridiculous.
It is very cool. I get to peer in, and they have metal railings all around the park. And the other day I peered in, and I realized I was standing outside the stables where the New Zealand horses were, the Canadian horses, I think, and the girl from Thailand. I could spot her flag up on the wall as well. So it's quite cool. I can almost see what's going on backstage.
And, of course, you're talking about Nina. Now, I would like to point out that at what point were you removed by security for trying to sneak into the stable?
I do, you know, I keep thinking I could climb over those railings, but there's some very handsome soldiers guarding the gate who are all smiling very sweetly when I walk past, but they also have guns. So I think I won't be sneaking in anywhere. But really weirdly, I was walking up the hill yesterday and there was a man on the opposite side of the road just, you know, taking out his mobile phone and taking a picture. And I thought, what on earth is he taking a picture of? You know, it's just the side of the park and it's densely wooded sort of surrounding, so there's nothing to see. And when I got closer, there was a dog that, you know, I'd like to think I know dogs quite well. I would say this was like at least 90% wolf, but pure white and the bluest eyes I've ever seen. And this dog just looked at me and walked alongside me for about 30 seconds. I snapped it on my phone to prove that this dog did exist. But I have to say, I don't think it had tickets and it certainly didn't have press accreditation. So how did the dog get in and I can't get in? I'm not happy. There's a wolf amidst the Olympic venue.
That is, are you serious? That's crazy.
I will post the picture on my Facebook so you can see this mystery white wolf.
Unbelievable. Well, then you got past the handsome guys with guns, so you can do it too, girl. Consider that a challenge.
I think maybe that it is so being difficult to get Olympic tickets, and maybe somebody has gone all Harry Potter and become an animagus, turned into an animal to get into the Olympic site.
Those who haven't seen the movie don't get it, but to me that is some very good British humor right there.
Somebody is listening in the same room and shaking their head woefully. So I'm not sure everyone appreciates my British humor there, but never mind.
All you need is a invisibility cloak, okay? And then you'll be fine.
I should have sneaked into the venue yesterday in my invisibility cloak and frightened Michael Young to stop him beating the Brits. We were so close, but these Germans, they're just too good, unfairly good.
Well, you know, when you've got a team like you guys had with Zara Phillips and William Fox Pitt and Mary King, you can't believe that you would get beat. I for sure thought you guys were definitely the favorites, but obviously Ingrid Klimke and Michael Young are forced to be reckoned with as well. But my God, you guys had an amazing team put together.
We did indeed. We're very lucky. I think everybody did an amazing test and their cross-country rounds were just superlative. You know, all those falls and spills, and we got all our five riders round with no jumping penalties. You know, a sprinkling of time penalties, I think, was our biggest fault. And then, you know, we did jump pretty well. I think three going clear and two having four faults apiece is pretty impressive. I do wonder if we'd had the wonderful Piggy French on our team, if she'd been able to produce that 30-something dressage test, that would have just, you know, would have been the helping hand that would have kept us in team gold position, but sadly it was not to be, and hopefully Piggy's horses will be back to full fitness and we'll have her in Rio de Janeiro and we'll beat the Germans next time.
Somebody's got to. Dear God, two in a row is just not fair.
They're just being greedy. Michael Young is being greedy. Nobody should be world, European, and Olympic champion at the same time. It's just, you know, give somebody else a chance. It's not very British. It's not very sporting.
That's funny.
Talk to us a little bit about, because I'm sorry, I was so impressed with one person that with all the pressure, amidst all of the talk, all of the drama, all of the television cameras, Zara Phillips went out there and just performed. What an incredible job she did for her country.
She did indeed, and she's still fielding so much media interest. You know, she's been on our BBC News, ITV News today, and still everybody wants to ask her, you know, what does Granny think about you winning? And she you know, she does get fed up with it. Nobody else is getting those kind of questions about their relatives, funnily enough. But I was quite pleased today that they started off the interview and it wasn't all about Zara and her team. It was, you know, we've got Mary King, who's an Olympic legend and has done six Olympics, and that's how they started it off. And I think Zara's always a bit reluctant to be in the spotlight, and for her to keep a cool head when you've got a million cameras focused on you and that everybody just wants to talk to you and about your very famous family, it must get quite wearisome and quite distracting. And I think the fact that she performed as well as she did is testament to her ability.
Oh, definitely. I mean, to have somebody like, well, she's got a great team. Between Mary King and Tina Cook rode incredible, and Nicola Wilson was fantastic. I mean, your whole team was just a force to be reckoned with, and you start reading down like the bio of these people. You know, so much was made of Mark Todd being in his seventh Olympics. Well, Mary King was in her sixth.
I know, indeed. and she said on the news today, I don't know if you've spotted on our Facebook page today, but Mary King said that she wanted to stay on and match Mark Todd's record and go for a seventh Olympics. And I wouldn't be surprised if she was there. I also think that her daughter Emily, who's 16 now and is already doing pretty well, she could well be on the team. So we might have two kings and a member of the royal family in the next Olympics. So a very royal eventing squad.
Without a doubt. I mean, that'd be just fantastic. So, well, that's great. Any favorite part of the entire thing for you?
Oh, it's all been amazing. I mean, just being able to kind of spot what's going on and sense some of the atmosphere, and the standard was just brilliant. I have to say Yoshi going into the lead on day two was just brilliant. I remember him, I think it was in 2005 in badminton, when he suddenly stormed from nowhere into the lead after cross country day, and I was really delighted to see him do so well in dressage, and it was a real shame to see him take a spill cross country. But also just amazing that it wasn't your typical, you know, just your typical eventing nations who were winning. We had other countries who were well up there and in contention, and it just makes the sport so much more interesting and accessible for everyone.
Okay, when you saw Yoshi going down he had to jump off the drop fence and go straight down that bank. The second he did it, I was like, don't look down! Don't look down! Oh, no! He looked down!
I think the fact that Clayton Fredericks did the exact same thing, and considering, you know, he was second at the World Equestrian Games, you know, Clayton is a very good pilot.
Clayton Phillips, Clayton did not do the exact same thing. Clayton's horse slid, his hind legs split out.
Yeah, so he didn't the exact same fence, though. But we've been watching it with Four Star Eventers all week, so it's quite interesting to get their views on it. And somebody pointed out that maybe Yoshi's own fitness wasn't quite up to scratch, and so he was getting tired by that stage, and his balance went, and so he came out the side door.
I got a question for you, too, on that. There was some reports before the cross-country day, and this proved true. There was a lot of slipping going on. It had rained the day before, but it wasn't raining that day. There was some reports that some of the riders were unhappy with how short they mowed the grass. You know, like in Kentucky, they'll leave it a couple, 2-3 inches tall in the lane so they get some traction. Here, it looked like a golf course, like they had mowed it really short.
I mean, this is ancient turf we're talking about. You know, the park's been there for hundreds of years. And I do know that they had the Sports Turf Research Institute who came in to completely redo it. And they put an awful lot of money into it. And I think the going was, I think it was good. But, you know, they can't let it grow too long. It's a public park. I'm not entirely sure about the kind of logistics of it or the timing. Obviously, it's probably not the same as the grass they get at badminton, but that's, you know, an event there year in, year out, apart from this year. And whereas the Olympic Park is a public park that's been commandeered for 3 weeks to become an equestrian venue.
Right. And that's what you talk to you about your terrific show you guys have been doing called Rudel's Roundup. I've been watching that. And I watched the first episode, and I laughed my butt off when in the first episode, now this is Horse and Country TV doing their wrap-up show at the end of the day with Jenny Rudel, who does a great job. And I know you're producing that, so good job to you too.
Thank you.
We're seeing this beautiful set, and they're sitting there with these riders and everything. And then all of a sudden she says, and we want to thank the families whose house we've commandeered to do this. And they give a pan shot back, and there's the family standing in their kitchen looking at you guys with this set. With this set built in their living room, and apparently, what'd you do, knock on doors across from the venue there at the park and say, we want to take over your living room? How'd you end up in somebody's house?
Now, they always say the horsey world is small and everybody knows each other. The reason we find out about the house is because I use the same saddle fitter, Alex McCracken, that Jenny uses, and he said he was parking for the cross-country day at a friend of his partner's house. And so, sure enough, it turned out he was. We gave him a ring, said, can we do a little TV show? And Claire Francis, whose house it is, she has put up with us. And she's been amazing, and she's let us come in, bring all these riders, take over her house. We've got crew in there from 9 in the morning till 9 at night, and she's been an amazing sport, and her family have been great and so helpful. So we're very, very lucky for Frances. She does event herself. She does have horses, so I think it probably helps on the tolerance side.
Now,
okay,
you're...
Can you imagine, Glenn, how much house cleaning you would have to do as a horse person to let all these other people that you probably look up to and admire and TV cameras? I'd be cleaning for days. Actually, what you guys should do as a thank you is send her a house cleaner for, you know, a month.
I think she does have a house cleaner. So, but the house has been immaculate despite our best efforts to, you know, spread guests and empty glasses and everything. But it's a real fun atmosphere, and it's great, you know. And if you tune into the show, and you can watch it on our line on online at horseandcountry.tv, and it's also being shown on HRTV, as well as in Dubai and various other countries. So do tune in. It's not just about the British riders. We've got we had David O'Connor on the other day talking about Karen, and also talking about the Canadian team who he was a chef to keep for. So it's a real international flavour. You never know who's going to turn up, and we'll be doing the same show all the way through the dressage and show jumping. Likewise, if you're an Olympic rider who thinks, I really want to be on that sofa, get in touch. We'd love to hear from you.
Now, one other thing before we let you go, and that is, I noticed off the topic of eventing, is that I noticed you guys post that tonight on Sky Channel 280, you're doing a Black Caviar documentary, and of course, Black Caviar is a horse that we've been following since the very beginning, and I think it's exciting that you guys are going to do a highlight on that. Is that going to be available on the website as well?
I'm not entirely sure because it's one that we've commissioned from Australia, but it's said to be a really good documentary. It's a two-parter. It's the first part tonight and then the second part tomorrow. all about, you know, how she came to be the most talked about mare in racing. And then the second part tomorrow is all about her coming over to Royal Ascot and doing that nail-biting race that had us all on the edge of our seats. But she's kept her unbroken record, and I really hope it's going to be popular, because I personally would love to see more racing fans tune in and have a few more racing programs on the channel.
Very good. Thank you, Victoria. We certainly appreciate you taking time out to visit us during this very busy time for you. I hope you can join us again next Wednesday as we talk about dressage and jumping.
I hope so, and I very much hope, because I have actually bet money on a dressage competition for the first time ever in my life, probably the last, Charlotte Dujardin to win gold for Great Britain on home turf. I'm convinced it's going to happen, so hopefully I'll have good news to report next week.
All right, great. Thanks, Victoria. You're terrific.
My pleasure.
Where do you so place nice that bet? Because I'm pretty sure they don't have bet on Charlotte in Vegas.
No, you know what? I think they bet on everything in England, don't they? They have these like bookies that are illegal that you can go bet on anything you want to.
She's breaking the law and then telling us about it? Ooh. Oh, Glenn, are you there?
I'm here. Sorry if my sound went away for a minute. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, now let's get to we're not doing a song today. Instead, we're going to talk about Colbert, because Colbert is back. Colbert is back talking about the expensive, very wealthy sport of dressage. And he decided to look into it a little further, and on last night's show, he went and took a dressage lesson. Now, when you listen to this, you're going to ask yourself why this trainer ever agreed to do this. But he did, and it translated well to sound, so I thought I'd play it for you. But here, do you want to hear it? You haven't seen it yet, right?
I saw the first part, but I haven't seen the actual lesson. So that will air for me today, because it's too late at night to watch. But, I can't wait. This trainer, by the way, took some abuse in the first one.
Well, I don't have the first one. There was two night series. The first night he interviewed the trainer. Last night he actually took the lesson. I have last night's, but it's still about 8 minutes long. So we'll play it for you so that you can all listen to it. And then we're going to be back with the horse.com talking about donkeys and mules with Dr. Robert Miller.
Mitt isn't the only Romney wowing them on the international stage this week. So is Rafalka, the Romney family horse, who is at the London Olympics competing in dressage, which I have declared the sport of the summer for those who use summer as a verb. Now, Rafalka is poised not only to take the gold, she could have a major impact on the U.S. presidential election.
The VP selection comes shortly, probably after the Olympics.
And Mrs. Romney has a horse competing in the Olympics that could keep her in London until as late as the 12th, and it's quite likely there will be no announcement, at least until then. Yes, there will be no VP announcement until after Rafalka is done competing. And that could mean only one thing. Romney has chosen Rafalka as his running mate. It's a historic choice. Folks, this is an historic choice, like Sarah Palin. Like Palin, Rafalka's female, also doesn't read newspapers, and has completed the same number of terms as governor. Great, great VP pick. Her one negative is that critics claim dressage is elitist. But not so, says Rafalka's writer and trainer, Jan Ebling. He said, quote, money is not something that defines dressage. It's something you can do with a normal budget. Yeah, it's really all about budgeting. You cut out a couple of lattes a week, by the end of the month, you got yourself a $3 million Dutch warm blood. And these normal budgets are why dressage is full of normal folk, like Prince Abdullah Al Saud of Saudi Arabia, Princess Natalie Zu Zayn Wittgenstein of Denmark, and Zara Phillips, granddaughter of Queen Elizabeth II. These are the people in your neighborhood, or on your money. Well, Well, folks, last night I showed you part one of my adventure in the workaday world of horse ballet. Tonight, the thrilling conclusion, which, in the spirit of NBC's coverage, we actually taped 10 days ago. Jim?
Last night I sat down with Michael Barazone, member of the Beijing Olympic team and coach for the 2012 London Games, who taught me all about dressage, especially its hardest disciplines, passage, or horsey walking sideways, and piaffing, or fancy prancing. I was hooked and had my eyes on the prize.
What do I have to do to wear that tiara?
The tiaras were won by myself.
That's your tiara.
Well, I won it.
I don't understand why people say dressage is an elitist sport. I mean, you guys wear tiaras.
If you succeed at your lesson today, you can wear the tiara.
The sparkly gauntlet was thrown down, so we moseyed into the stables to learn the tools of the trade.
Now this thing, this is nice.
That's a lunging whip.
This is when I lunge at my horse?
No, lunging is when you're taking a younger horse and you teach him easy.
That's the real deal right there.
Easy.
That brings back
all
some memories. Do the female horses and the male horses ever date?
No.
No, they do not.
No, dating is all arranged marriages. You know, it's selective animal breeding.
We do that at my country club, too. Yeah, we arrange what kids can date each other so we'll have a better crop for next year's swim team.
Then it was time to meet my dance partner.
So, Stephen, this is Conchita.
Hello, Conchita. Now, is there anywhere I should not touch the horse?
Generally, approaching a horse is about the way you approach it. You don't want to be in front of her or behind her.
Okay, what would happen then? Well, that's when she kicks my skull off my shoulders?
The likelihood that this horse is going to kick your skull off your shoulders is about zero. Is it
about zero or is it zero?
Well, there's no absolute.
Okay. Excuse me, would you hold the horse for a second?
I'll be happy to hold the
horse. Okay, and it was lovely talking to you.
But then I remembered the tiara. Even without a skull, that would look great on my neck stump. So I suited up.
He comes out with shat.
What?
He comes out with shad belly.
And prepared to mount my lady. Oh
my. First thing, girth.
Girth is important.
Stirrup
stone. Sometimes more important than length. Okay. Now, is this how you start it? You just pull this like a lawnmower?
All right.
That's it.
There you go.
Exactly.
Conchita.
Give her a little push.
Walk forward.
A little push. Exactly. Hands together, and you stay here.
Am I piaffing?
Not yet.
How do you say giddy up in French?
You don't say anything when you're riding the horse.
Now, Michael, should I be wearing a cup? Because I am not.
I'm not worried about that. I am.
I'm a little worried. I mean, I wore a cup in baseball as a kid, and I'm thinking this is like a 1,500-pound baseball.
Well, I haven't ever worn one, and I'm still doing all right.
Okay.
Everything's functioning.
I kind of want to do more than all right, if you don't mind.
You shouldn't smirk, and you shouldn't have a frown.
This kid?
A little too much of a frown. That's more. That looks like you're having a little bit too good of a time.
So don't
The horse spooks and jumps sideways.
I think I might have pee-offed a little.
You're not. You haven't, but we're going to.
No, I'm pretty sure I pee-offed. I might need a towel.
Oh, okay.
Who's winning, me or the horse?
You're doing fine.
Okay.
But just fine wasn't good enough to win that bedazzled headband.
What do I have to do to get the tiara?
If we're going to get the tiara, we have to do a little pee off.
So after a lifetime of 20 minutes of training, it was time to achieve the most difficult discipline in all of dressage.
Slow down. Slow down. Lean back. Relax your hands. Oh, lean back. Not too much. Little fingers close. Little fingers close. Lean back. Little fingers close. The tiara is yours.
I pee-offed it.
Woo!
We've pee-offed. We've passaged. Michael, tell me. Can I get off now?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, Conchita.
Well done, big girl.
A noble steed. I need an ice pack for my thigh, please. Michael, thank you so much for the experience of a lifetime.
My pleasure, my pleasure.
Hopefully today we have proven that dressage is the sport of Joe Sixpack. Or at the very least, Joe Tiara. You're welcome.
And Team USA.
What is this, Corbell?
Well, there it was. There's Colbert, and he did tee off a little, and it didn't look like there was a stunt double up there. It actually looked like he was up there, but it was a very slow, contained one.
Yeah, and that's the thing you learn is that these dressage horses, they all learn to pee off from the ground before they even have a rider on. So somebody standing next to them can actually get them to pee off. So that I'm sure he didn't collect it and send impulsions, but. Let me first of all back up. I have never seen anybody win a tiara at anything. Is that a common dressage competition, like a ribbon?
I don't know. I hadn't heard that either, and the tiara was sitting there, and I don't know if that was staged or not. We have Michelle from thehorse.com on here. Let's bring her into this conversation. Do you know if the tiara is a thing in dressage, Michelle?
I want to win a tiara. I've never seen a tiara. Saw a show, but when I saw it, I went, I want one. So, but
so
no.
Time...
Usually, we just get ribbons and plates and pottery and crystal, and you know, so.
So
but,
the only time that I've ever actually seen anybody win a tiara was my grandmother on her 25th year of working at Macy's, walked in and they congratulated her with a tiara and like some sort of like, you know, princess kind of staff,
aww.
I guess. So that's actually the tiara I wore in my wedding. So this the only time anybody's ever had a tiara on was when she won it for 25 years of service to Macy's. I've never seen anybody win something like that. Maybe it'll become more popular now. What do you think, Michelle?
Well, that's very sweet. I actually thought I went, well, maybe that's an East Coast thing. I don't think that on the West Coast.
That was new on us, too.
I don't think that'll help draw more men to our sport.
No. Or it might. It's dressage, after all.
Yeah.
How much convincing did it take to get that guy to do that, to get the trainer to do that? I don't know.
I hadn't heard, but I think he was a pretty good sport. It was pretty dang funny. But did you see the horse spook? Have you guys talked about the horse spooking?
Yes.
Holy cow.
Stayed on, too. I'm surprised.
Yeah, well, they definitely had a saddle on that would be hard to get out of, I think. But, I saw that horse spook, and it was such a typical kind of dressage horse spook that I went, oh, no. But I'm glad he stayed on and didn't get hurt. But, you know, and they brought out the big warm blood, and, you know, I kind of thought maybe they'd have, like, a little quarter horse or a schooling pony or something, but they brought out the serious horse, and then they went to ask the horse to pee off and passage, and I was like, uh-oh, we're going to go launching, but she held it together. What a good girl.
Well,
I don't know. Have you ever had someone come up behind you with a pee off whip when you're on one of these things? Because it's like riding a keg of dynamite, usually.
Yeah.
He was not smiling or smirking during that particular scene, if you notice. He was
pretty
concentrating at that point. Well, let's get to your guest and the topic of conversation today. We're going to switch gears a little bit. We're very excited to have him on. And of course, we're talking to Michelle Anderson of thehorse.com with the weekly horse health segment. And I'm not even going to play your theme today because it has nothing to do. I ain't getting sick or anything. So we can we're good today.
Yes, well, we're talking today about taking care of mules and donkeys. And we have in the August issue a whole article. You can read more about it if you're interested. We at The Horse have had just a tremendous interest in donkeys especially, but also mules. And so that seems to be a growing segment of the equine owning population. So we did that feature article. We also have a great PDF on the website. Go to thehorse.com/donkeyhealthfacts, and there are 15 extra things that you'd want to know about donkey health in that PDF. But today we have Dr. Miller, who is from Thousand Oaks, California, and he has been an owner and an expert in mules. Dr. Miller, are you here?
Yes, I am.
Welcome,
He's
Dr.
An expert
Miller.
On everything, Michelle.
Yes,
He's an
anyway.
Expert on everything.
He's like a legend.
And we're glad to have him here to talk about mules. And Dr. Miller, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? And
well, I'm retired from practice now. I graduated veterinary school in 1956. And except for the first year when I practiced in Arizona, which was my home at the time, I've been in California, right here in Thousand Oaks in the Conejo Valley, which is between Los Angeles and Santa Barbara. And I practiced all species, and I mean literally all, because we did a tremendous amount of zoo work. But I did, over the years, over my career, I did mostly horses, mostly equines, and so that's my background. And today I'm in the second career teaching equine behavior, which keeps my wife and I busy. We travel all over the world doing this, and when I'm home, I do my riding.
And you also have been a mule owner for how long did you say, 40 years?
About 40 years, yes.
Okay. And how did you end up owning mules?
Well, it's a long story. I'll make it as brief as possible. I asked a colleague who had 15 mules, what in the world ever led you to mules? And I had, at that time, zero experience with mules. I had done packing during my college years, both for the Forest Service and for Guest Ranch, but we used horses, not mules. The mules were a disappearing phenomenon after World War II. And he said, he said, my folks have a ranch in Colorado, and I go there twice a year to fish and to hunt in the fall. And he said, one year the horses were all laid up, so I had to ride a mule. And once you ride a mule, you don't want to ride horses anymore. And I said, that's ridiculous. And he said, have you ever ridden a mule? And I said, no. Then he says, how do you know it's ridiculous? And I said, well, if it were true, everybody'd be riding mules. He said, I'm going to loan you a mule. And he says, for 1 year. And at the end of the year, you'll be converted. Well, I had five horses at the time and nothing for my children to ride. They were either unbroke or just too much for children. And I said, "Is it safe? Will this mule be safe for kids?" He said, yes, absolutely. Well, I won't go into the details, but I put this mule to all kinds of tests, and I called him 35 days later and said, all right, I'm a convert.
No kidding.
And we have had horses and mules ever since, but I primarily ride mules.
So can you tell us, for those of us who don't know the difference between a mule, a donkey, and a horse, what is the difference?
Well, the horse is and the donkey are related species, but they're separate species, and they're genetically different, even though they have a common origin, and they will crossbreed. Now, when you cross a male donkey, a jack, with a female horse, a mare, you get what's called a mule, and they are, with rare exceptions, they are sterile. So they, the only way to get a mule is to breed a mare with a jack. Now, if you do the opposite, if you breed a stallion to a genet, a female donkey, you get a different creature called a hinny. And there's very, very slight differences. Frankly, some people say they can tell the difference. I really can't. I've seen hinnies and thought they were mules, and I've seen mules that could have been hinnies. But they're not quite the same. But the mule is by far the most common and popular.
Okay. And working with the mules and the horses and the donkeys, what are the personality differences between them?
Well, there's several sayings in the mule industry which are really profound. One of them is that mules are just like horses, only more so. I think what that implies is that the methods that are optimum, the ideal methods for working with horses, are necessary in mules. Another saying is that mules must be trained the way horses should be trained. The basic difference is that horses are forgiving creatures. Frankly, if they weren't, most horse trainers probably couldn't make a living. They are forgiving creatures, most of them. If a horse is unforgiving, we blame it on the horse and we call it an outlaw, when actually the problem is usually human in origin. Mules are unforgiving. You must use appropriate methods. The methods that should be used on horses, you must use on mules if you're to get a compliant and cooperative individual.
And so if you have donkeys and mules and horses, can they catch diseases from each other, or do they have similar health issues?
Yes, and in general, they have the same problems. The percentages of the problems is what varies. Some things that are common in donkeys and mules are rare in horses, but to a much greater extent, problems that are common in horses are rare in mules. One of the several things I find attractive about mules is their resistance to the most common afflictions in horses. And, of course, as a veterinarian, I'm very aware of that. And I've often jokingly said if everybody rode mules, we veterinarians would go broke. Now, that's an exaggeration, but that is one of the things I admire about mules is their resistance to a lot of the common problems that we see in horses. But they're by no means immune. They do get them.
So do you find that the mules tend to be more sound physically than horses as well and less prone to lameness?
Yes, in general, yes. For almost a half a century, as long as Bishop Mule Day is the largest mule show in the world has existed, we've gone almost every year. And before I got involved with mules, they always had races out of a starting gate for mules. And I'd go down and examine the winners, ask the owner the age of the animal and its breeding, what Jack sired it, what kind of a mare it was out of. And what I noticed is even at the 8, 9, 10, and even 11 years of age, these winning racing mules had remarkably sound legs. That strongly attracted me to them, and I puzzled over it. But that's one of the things, is they are more resistant to the types of problems so common and too common in horses that, you know, I saw every day of my life as a veterinarian.
And donkeys in particular, though, have some things that they deal with more than horses. Can you tell us some of the things that can go wrong health-wise with the little donkeys? I don't know that they're all little, but donkeys.
There are a few, just a very few conditions that are more common in donkeys than is common in horses or even in mules, but very few. They're tough little animals. I have to tell you that I have fairly limited experience with donkeys. I've only owned one. And that was a rescue case. I did learn a lot about donkey behavior. For example, she was 2 years of age, and I got her primarily to eat weeds and cut down on the fire danger. So I staked her out on a long rope and, of course, worried that she'd tangle her legs, which could lead to injury. I stood by. Well, she did. She got tangled up, went down, raised her nose over, examined the ropes wrapped around her legs, sighed, and laid back down. It wasn't the struggling reaction that you see in horses, and most horses would injure themselves under those conditions. And that was my first revelation as to the nature of the donkey, which is present in most mules as well, that is so different than horses. Now, if you want me to explain the difference, I'll be happy to do that.
The difference between the donkeys and the mules,
the
or the donkeys
and
the horses?
Horse.
Sure.
And the mule, of course, inherits physically, physiologically, and behavior-wise from either or both parents. But the horse evolved on flat, open grasslands, and its primary defense is flight. It's a flighty creature. Now, this is useful to us because we've harnessed it down the racetrack, around the barrels, after a calf, and into the collar. It also was the reason we have so many problems with horses and why they injure themselves and injure people so often. The donkey evolved in very steep mountainous terrain where instant flight could be fatal. So when a donkey senses something that might be dangerous, it doesn't immediately run away from that like a horse will. What it does is it analyzes. And it will do one of three things. It will decide it's best to run like a horse, or, secondly, it sees something, it's afraid, but it feels safe where it's standing, and it says, I'm safe here, and nothing is going to make me move. And that's where the reputation for stubbornness comes from. The third alternative is to attack. And that's why donkeys, burros, are being used to guard sheep, for example, against coyotes, because they will do what a horse will not do, and that is they will charge out, attack, and even kill a coyote. And this decision can take a fraction of a second, but it's that judgmental attitude, the fact that they make decisions, that makes them so uniquely different. It's the reason, too, that a lot of people cannot get along with mules is because they think for themselves. They're not blindly obedient. And it's the reason other people, are attracted to them. I admire that intelligence and that judgment. And I've learned over the years to respect that judgment. I've argued with mules sometimes and found out that they were right. And I was wrong.
Have you had a favorite mule?
Yes. She's long gone now. But we were given a mule at 20 years of age. She was a working cow horse or cow mule. And starting to stiffen up a little bit with age. And she had some physical problems. A moon blindness in one eye, for example. And the man that owned her, who was a vaquero, a California vaquero, said, I've got a spade bit trained mule, and I want to be sure she goes to a good home. I know you like mules, and I know you're a vet. Well, I was very leery of it, but I was willing to go see her, and the moment I saw her, I knew I wanted that mule. We had her to age 34. Everybody in the family rode her. My daughter won many, many classes, including competition against horses. She was the single best animal we ever owned in our life. She was just remarkable. And she has to be our favorite. She's been gone many years now.
Now, do they tend to live a little longer? How long did you have her?
Yeah, she lived to 34. She was sound to the day she died. She did go completely blind at the end. But she knew her way around the corral. She never bumped into anything. And because she was comfortable and happy, we just let her live out her full lifespan.
Yeah.
Mules and donkeys tend to live 5 to 10 years longer than horses. They also mature more slowly. And
they're too stubborn to die.
Pardon?
They're too stubborn to die, Dr. Miller. It's like,
yeah,
we're not going anywhere. You're going to hang around.
Well, the greatest problem that we make with horses is we start them too young and work them too hard and cause them to break down prematurely. I saw this every day of my life as a practicing veterinarian. Mules and donkeys mature even more slowly than horses do. So they should be delayed even more. It's our culture. We're always in a hurry.
So what age do you recommend starting mules under saddle?
Well, you can get on them as 2 years old. There's a lot of ground training that you can and should do. And you can get on their back and plunk around on them as 2 years old. And this, I do the same with horses. But I have never seriously started riding one of my horses till 3.5 years of age, or some even older. I've never put them to serious hard work like jumping or anything till they're 4.5 or older. And the same should be true of mules, or perhaps even more so.
Well, thank you, Dr. Miller. I appreciate you coming in and sharing with us about your experience with mules. Again, Glenn, we have that PDF at thehorse.com/donkeyhealthfacts, and you can learn more about donkeys and a little bit about mules in there, such as they're more complicated to castrate. And Dr. Miller, do you have any experience with that, with castrating or gelding the mules?
Yes, but while I think of it, let me make a comment, which I was sure you were going to ask me about. I'm the guy that 54 years ago started this concept of imprint training of newborn foals.
Mm-hmm.
And it took half a century, but it's now all over the world in all disciplines and all breeds. But the biggest advocates of all are the mule people. And I've had a number of people tell me that the reason for the increase in mules, due to the economic recession, most breeds are going down in numbers, but mules are increasing in numbers. And I've had a number of breeders tell me the main reason for the increasing popularity of mules is imprint training. Because mules are more challenging to train than horses. If you can train them at birth, and they are so responsive, and all of the ones I've raised, I've trained at birth, including our world champion mule, Jordan S. Jean, who is the only mule that's been invited to jump at an Olympics. That was the Los Angeles Olympics in 1984. So I wanted to say that imprint training is widely accepted by the mule industry, very widely accepted. You'll see lots of ads in the magazines.
And we actually, in my area up here in Oregon, have a woman, a trainer, who competes in dressage at third level on a mule. So we see him all the time, and very, very nice animal. And it's fun to see them succeed in traditional horse sports, and he does very well in his dressage, so very cool. But Dr. Miller, do you have any comments on that castration issue with mules?
Yes. One thing that may seem radical to you is early in my career, I heard that they were castrating steeplechase horses in England at under a week of age, which was unheard of in our culture at the time. And so I decided to experiment with it. I didn't become an advocate of it because, frankly, I can castrate a full-grown horse, say a two-year-old or three-year-old or older, faster than I can a 4 or 5-day-old foal. So I did not become an advocate of it, and most people would require a lot of persuasion. But when people ask me, when should I castrate, I would tell them any time you want. And they said, but it's only a week old. And I said, I can do it. So I did quite a few horses and some mules, including my own, at a week of age or younger. And It's still a rare thing in the United States, but there's no problem at all as far as I'm concerned. That's the main comment I have about castration is that I was an advocate of early castration. I didn't preach it, but all my own horses and mules that I castrated, I did a week of age or younger.
Okay. Well, we have that download, and people can learn all kinds of things, like donkeys tend to founder in their back feet rather than their front, which I found fascinating, that they can be more challenging to castrate than horses and have more issues with that. Also, some specific skin diseases that are common in donkeys, if you come across those. So check that out.
And also, I wanted to mention, Michelle, that Dr. Miller has a website at robertmmiller.com. You can find all of his books and DVDs and things over there. Plus, what a lot of people probably don't know about Dr. Miller is that he's a bit of a cartoonist, and he also has a website for that, and you can find that link on robertmmiller.com. Thank you, Dr. Miller, for joining us this morning. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Dr. Miller.
Well, thank you, Michelle, for putting that together and having Dr. Miller on to talk. I love donkeys. Everybody in the audience knows I love donkeys, you know.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, have people check out the PDF that we have. It has some just really interesting things about how different donkeys can be than horses, things that I didn't know that I just found really fascinating. So, and also on there, since it is Olympics time, I want to put a pitch out for our Olympics blog. Jennifer Bryant is over there right now covering and doing some great posts about health-related issues with the Olympic teams. So check that out also at thehorse.com.
Very good. Thank you, Michelle. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Glenn.
How do you
get
that?
How did she get that gig?
I mean, come on. Y'all had to be fighting over that one. You want me to go to the Olympics and write? Oh, okay. Done.
Yes. Yes, please. Thank you.
Yeah, seriously.
Jennifer's great. She's also the editor of the USDF Connection and a great freelance writer. And so she's having a great time over there sending back pictures and keeping us updated on what she's doing.
Keeping you green with envy. I get it.
I know. I know.
All right, Michelle. We'll
Thanks,
talk
Michelle.
To you next week, darling. Thank you.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye.
So tomorrow we are going to have on our recorded episode tomorrow, the Dressage Radio Show actually did an interview with Kathy Conley, who is a rider, coach, trainer, and a member of the High Performance Committee for the USET, for the United States Equestrian Team. And she is a very well-respected coach and trainer in dressage here in the United States. And they did an interview with her and sort of doing a pre-show about who's going to be doing what over there and who to look for and what countries and which riders and which horses. And that we will play for you tomorrow morning, because guess what starts tomorrow, Jamie?
Dressage in the Olympics.
Colbert's favorite sport. The summer sport.
The sport of the summer, according to Stephen Colbert. I love it. Just a couple words on the Eventing Olympics, because we didn't really get to talk kind of deep about it. Do you have any standout performances, Glenn, that you thought of?
I thought, let me take a look here. I actually thought that, you know, I like Mary King. She pulled a rail or two there in jumping, and I was so sad to see that, because she is one of my favorite riders of all time. But also Mark Todd. I mean, I realize in the individuals, he didn't do as well, but he did. He just came through, you know, with his, eighth Olympics or whatever. He came in 12th in individual. We have to mention that New Zealand was third in the nations. And they were so excited to be third. They are so thrilled down there to be third in eventing and to get that bronze medal. So I think it would I kind of think it would be Mark Todd that really stood out for me, you know, as somebody that I actually got goosebumps when I watched it, just knowing his story.
Now, I have to ask, is Karen O'Connor and David O'Connor still kind of in bed with Pirelli and still kind of doing that, or are they separated?
I think they are, actually. I think from what I know, they are. Why?
They are what? They're still together?
I think they still have a relationship there.
I was thinking that there is no way that Pat Parilli was okay with the bit that Karen O'Connor was using on Mr. Medicut. Did you see that piece of hardware?
Jennifer, as soon as she walked in, went, "Oh, my God, look at all that stuff on his face." I didn't even know what it was.
I was like, that is definitely not a Parilli-approved bit. However, I would like to say that she was amazing. That is not an easy horse to ride, and she rode the heck out of it. Jessica Phoenix on Exponential, great job for the Canadian team. She definitely deserves a what's
came
up.
In
and
seconds,
I would,
by the way.
Yeah. I would also like to say that I was incredibly disappointed in Tiana Coudray's round in Stadium. Her lower leg was so loose, flying everywhere. She kept losing her reins. Like, I was like, show her your reins and close your fingers, girl. Tighten the leg. Like, I picked her apart. And I love her, and I love her horse, so I was a little disappointed there. I would like to say Lucinda Fredericks made a fantastic end when she did her show jumping. You know, it was a disappointing cross-country round for her. She did a fantastic job. And the Swedes, dear God, where did they come from? They were all awesome.
Yeah, they were. They were terrific. Now, was there a name on the British team that you were surprised didn't matter?
Oh, well, I mean, how do you not have William Fox Pitt in the top three at the end of this thing? It's just amazing. But their team was so strong, it didn't matter. And Zara Phillips, man, she was just incredible. I thought she just was amazing. And all the pressure that she's under and to go out and perform as well as she did, fantastic job. The whole weekend was so exciting to watch. And, again, Boyd Martin, we thank you for withdrawing and taking care of your pony. And I know that a lot of people did that, including we just talked about her the German writer, Ingrid Klinke.
Ingrid
Klinke. Yeah, you know, again, everybody, great job. I can't wait for dressage. It's going to be exciting and then jumping. So we've still got more Olympics to come. NBC, get your stuff together. I'm coming after you. With the force.
All right. I do want to say this about the cross-country course before we let it go. The venue there and where they had it at the park and how it's set up, and it was a very hilly course, but how they sat it set up with that moon shot, one of my favorite shots of the day was the riders jumping through that half moon, and you could see the city in the background. The jumps were cool, the venue was cool, and the shots are amazing that are coming out across country there. Just take a look around, take a look at the pictures that were taken. They're just some amazing, amazing shots with the City of London in the background. I was very impressed with that.
Yeah, and finally, the hotel that won't give Holly Bennett a refund. Okay, this woman is an Olympian, for God's sake. She's an Olympian. She broke her pelvis. She can't continue her trip. She's supposed to go to Paris, stay real close to the Eiffel Tower, which is where we stayed when we went there, and it was awful. This place will not refund their money, and I've posted the link to it on Facebook. And if you click on that, there are hundreds of people that have written on their Facebook page, give Holly a refund. They need more. Keep it going.
Very good. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back live on Friday morning. Tomorrow morning, you'll hear more about dressage with the help of the Dressage Radio Show. And again, thank you, Jamie, for your opinions today on everything, and good job with that.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, y'all check it out. And everybody spay, neuter, and geld.
And I can't find my closing. Oh, there it is. So say it again right now.
Spay, neuter, and geld, although I personally don't recommend gelding at, like, 3 days old, but, you know, he's Dr. Miller, whatever he says goes, I guess.
That's right. He has more books than you.
I'll hold off, though. 6 months is my time. I'd have done Boomer at day two if I could have. Pain in the butt, dog. Bye.